I'm Holly Robinson-Pete, and I'm pleased to be working with Cigna Healthcare on a podcast called The Visibility Gap. In this episode, we're talking about how unconscious bias in the workforce can sometimes make people feel unseen, leading to avoidable health issues. Let's dig into this. Companies that are diverse and inclusive are 70% more likely to grow, and we all want that. And yet, 60% of workers feel like their current workplace is biased. There clearly is more work to still do. I'm lucky enough to have a couple of experts here with me today, so let me introduce you to them. I'm joined by Jennifer Brown, award-winning entrepreneur and globally recognized DEI thought leader. Using the concept of inclusive leadership, Jennifer has helped leaders across a variety of industries institute her leadership strategies, now adopted by some of the biggest companies in the world. Thank you for being here, Jennifer.
Thank you.
And this is Jackie Clayton, a human resources thought leader and inspirational speaker. She is Vice President of Talent Acquisition and DEIB at Textio. Jackie is focused on growing businesses through in-depth analysis and was named one of the 9 powerful women in business you should know. Welcome, Jackie.
Thank you.
This episode is about how we understand each other. You can work for a large enough company that can have departments that are good at seeing employees, but also have departments that are terrible at seeing the unseen. I really want to open this up to a conversation between the three of us. How can companies and leaders bridge those divides? Jackie, I'll start with you.
I think what we have to remember, and I always think it's funny, if I ask Black or brown people at work, how's everything going? It's always fine. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, okay, now that we've already done with that,
right.
I'm going to walk out this door and I'm going to come back and then we're going to have a real conversation.
Me a real answer. Yeah.
But so when you talk about bringing your whole self to work, I'm only going to bring to work what I feel safe bringing you, regardless of what you call that. And I don't think that people that don't have the experience or that natural curiosity are going to continue asking the question, and they will ask their employees and say, how are you doing? And they'll say, fine. And then they'll say, good. Mm. You know, I don't understand why we have a problem then. And so that's why it's so important that we put systems in place with the intention of making someone comfortable so that they don't have to be ask some of those questions, but build the relationship so that when you do ask those questions, they feel comfortable enough to give you the right answer.
Yeah.
I love that. And you know, if you want to be an ally, you know, speaking for people, non-Black people, non-Black and brown people, heterosexual, cisgender people, you have to ask more than once. You have to pursue. You need to be consistent and insistent on building relationships with people where trust happens to the point where somebody says, actually, I really am struggling. Actually, I am contending with XYZ, or this is coming up for me. So it really takes a lot more proactivity than I think a lot of people do. They check the box. Mm-hmm. But hanging in there with people and really demonstrating with your actions that you really do, it's not just you want to know, you need to know.
I always think, like, from a Black woman's perspective, as you try to become something that you're not, you are already unseen, but now you're part of creating the unseen life because you can't be fully yourself. And so you have years in that, but when you don't even have the words for it. And so some of this that you bring, and then you find yourself later, you're working, you're an executive, and you're like, what do I do now? Like, when do I get to be me? Mm-hmm. And your body has a weird way of doing that for you if you don't pay attention to what you're stuffing, if you don't address those things. I mean, you literally get sick. It's like when you have a cold and you'll say, I show up anyway. Then all of a sudden, you are knocked out for 2 weeks. And it's like, oh, we just needed you to lay down or take it back for a minute. But we don't think about that in terms of our physical health when it comes to stress or trying to mask yourself or not being able to be true to yourself.
Yeah. Well, as a white woman who thinks a lot about the ease with which I navigate environments that are majority people that look like me, the sensitivity I've developed that I've worked on that I try to teach leaders is the understanding of the different traumas that have accumulated for people that we don't see, that are invisible in ourselves too. You know, just there are no people that don't have trauma.
Mm-hmm.
But the sensitivity, the way that we need to be educating ourselves about all the different life experiences that are showing up in the people around us that we need to be successful with. Both sides need to cooperate here,
right,
and really get to the bottom of what's going on and then take it on and hold ourselves accountable for looking into it, supporting it, educating around it, destigmatizing it. That's the other thing. None of this stuff wants to be said.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
That's
we
it.
All avoid it, and we're so used to avoiding it and downplaying it, and it eats away at us, but it eats away at the health of the organization.
Yeah,
like, this is
need,
what people don't understand.
We need to teach these companies how to learn to look for this,
yeah,
right? To learn to look for it. And continuing that idea, like, what health impacts emerge when companies don't make attempts, real true efforts to look for these things? What health impacts do we see?
I think the number one thing is anxiety and depression,
mm-hmm,
that sometimes ends up being leave, right? You're talking about leaving at 3 months at a clip, or, you know, we see the burnout, headaches, migraines. But a lot of that anxiety is a lot of it affects your mental health, mm-hmm, more than anything else. But then what's also interesting is that we have other lives outside of this. Like, you know, no one has time for that, for any of that. And I think that we don't look at, I used to have a headache every day at 5 o'clock.
Mm.
To the point where I just thought that it, okay, you know, now
here comes
it's time
my
for my
5 o'clock
headache.
Headache.
Right. So I didn't do anything about it and never thought about, oh, maybe you're under stress, because I got used to it. And so it's so many people at work stuffing things down, those feelings and those parts down, unfortunately, sometimes will manifest itself in anger. It might not be at work, but you're angry and frustrated and unable to do that. But I think that's what makes me the most nervous is mental health, because we're not giving people the tools to handle it when you get those things. So you learn those from your counselor.
Yes. Sometimes companies will present as caring.
Right.
And especially when, like, something happens, like a loved one dies, something, mm-hmm, sudden like that. But then something like grief can bring up other stresses, and those stresses can bring up other health complications.
That's right.
Can companies be fully accepting of the full scope of the human experience? I mean, it's a fair question.
It is. I mean, I hear sometimes managers say, where does it end?
Mm.
You know, where does the individual's responsibility, you know, end and the company's responsibility begin? You know, and it's a tough, it's changing, and it's changed. I think with younger talent, there's an expectation that there's no boundaries. And a lot of people laugh about the no boundaries thing, but it's also true about people's lives outside of work, the racism and isms they're experiencing outside, bringing that in and not being able to compartmentalize it and not being willing to compartmentalize it. I think that's beautiful. In my generation, we were so good at stuffing. We were so good at, you know, maintaining these boundaries. We were told it's not appropriate for work. It had the impact on us. We burned out. We have the scars. I have great hope that it will change, because it will be forced to change by a generation that is much more in tune with naming things right away. That tells us something. That definitely, that is the beginning of the health impact.
The stress of having to be one person here, another person here, and not really fully figuring out which one is who you truly are, has got to have some impact.
It's a lot of identities that are doing this around seen and unseen diversity dimensions, and it's extra work, it's double work, it's triple work. That work, the word intersectionality refers to the compounding effects of multiple stigmatized identities and the sort of difficulty of holding all those things that create different reactions to you, and then different things to manage, because basically you're trying to educate and make everything okay all the time at the same time as you're trying to make yourself feel okay. Because, you know, you should be your first priority. I mean, you're the one on the receiving end of unexplored unconscious bias, or sometimes conscious bias. You have to take care of others. So it's such a double standard and a triple standard that some of us have to exist in this tiny, narrow, you know, lane in terms of how we're allowed to behave. You should feel honored when somebody shares the truth with you. And you should believe them the first time. That's the other thing. What I often say to people who want to move in their allyship, I say, you should know the top 10 things that happen for different groups that aren't like you. You should know what they hear, what the jokes are, what the comments are, what the assumptions are. There are things that Black women face, very specifically. There are things that LGBTQ people face. And in your allyship, I recommend as a student committing those to memory. And then the question becomes, are you on the lookout for them in yourself and others? Do you intervene? Do you turn something into a teaching moment? Do you follow up with someone who said something to educate them?
I heard a speaker that talked about micro appreciations. Mm. And that's when you go behind the scenes and said, I'm so glad you spoke up. Like, thanks for saying something. Like, that's something that we can all do, is offer that praise or agree with someone publicly in front of everyone so that we can see, they can see someone else has that same issue, so that the burden doesn't fall on the person who's experiencing the pain and the trauma.
And Jackie's point's so good. I just want to build on that. So the micro appreciations, in a way, give someone feedback that's new information about why they're appreciated and what they're doing that's really helping. They're taking up a cause. They are committing to talking about something publicly. They're putting what we call their professional capital in play on an issue. So those who stick their neck out, we need to encourage them, thank them, recognize that, and say, please do that more. This is the way culture changes, is that the majority group, particularly in leadership, are always looking at each other and listening to each other. What do you say? What don't you say? Things turn if we get a critical mass of humans who say, you know, this isn't right. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're not experiencing the harms because of their identity and the body that they're in, but they are stepping forward and saying the health, they're talking about the health of others. But it's really going to come down to people leave managers first before they leave jobs and companies. That's what we say in our world. And when you think about change, the frozen middle doesn't want to budge. Mm. And those, unfortunately, those people are the bosses that are creating this experience every day for our incoming talent. So it's a big, big challenge to reach all parts of an organization, I think.
Yeah.
Well, the culture is already there. The thing is like, if this, understand that if someone's coming and saying, this is what I'm experiencing at work, this is the system. This is the culture. This is just the person who brought it in, you know, to light by having the conversation. Mm. And so we have to look at the systems internally to figure out which ones were built with intention to make sure that people feel safe and that they belong. You can assume that people do not feel like they belong by that program, if that was not the intention. And so we have to go back and see, are we doing things because this is the way we've always done it? What was the intention of this policy? What was the intention of this activity? What is the outcome that we were hoping to see as a result? And then pivot if it's not working.
I always learn so much when I talk to you. And thank you both for being a part of this conversation. It's complex and they're difficult conversations, but that is exactly why we have this podcast. It's so important to continue to talk like this. This is how we get to some good solutions. So thank you so much. We know it can be hard to see the invisible challenges that people we work with every day are going through. But by practicing empathy, insight, and awareness, it's possible. And conversations like these are where we start. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete, and this has been The Visibility Gap.